Ms. Vogt, good morning. I apologize, I'm not sure how to pronounce your... Is it your client?
I believe it's the Vogt, but I'm not certain.
Okay, thank you very much. You may proceed.
Okay, please the court. My name is Diana Vogt of Jarvis Bruno and Vogt, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Vogt. And our purpose here today is to remedy an injustice. According to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, the opportunity to be heard is a litigant's most precious right and should be sparingly denied. The harshness of dismissal should be reserved for a failure to comply due to willfulness, bad faith, or the fault of the plaintiff. If there is no bad faith or willfulness, it is an abuse of discretion to dismiss a case for a discovery violation. That comes from Edgar versus Slaughter, which is one of the cases that is cited in the appellant's brief. A discovery is supposed to be a road to the truth. It's not supposed to be a trap used by either side to avoid an actual determination of the merits of the case at trial. Now, in this case, the failure to timely complete discovery was at least partly due to plaintiff's counsel, as well as Mr. Vogt and Mr. Moore. If you look at the timeline in this case, the complaint was filed in February of 2013. Answer was filed in April. There was a reply to a counterclaim. Then nothing was done until February of 2014, when the first motion for summary judgment was filed. It appears no depositions had been taken up until that point. And for that, I'm relying on Mr. Munch's statement in the record that he wanted to take Mr. Tavote's deposition before he took any of the other ones to build on, to either contradict or confirm what Mr. Tavote said. Then, in May, the summary judgment motion was denied because Judge Coffey found there was, in fact, a genuine issue of material fact regarding whether or not Mr. Tavote knew that there was a deficiency of $60,000 to $65,000 in the reserve account.
And that was raised by affirmative defense in the answer?
Mr. Tavote was sued on a note, and he did raise that as an affirmative.
Okay.
And also sought to set the contract aside for those misrepresentations. But then between May of 2014 and October 24th of 2014, again, no depositions are taken. It's not until October 24th of 2014 that Mr. Munch notices up Mr. Tavote's deposition. He does this without contacting his counsel and without confirming his availability. And he found out, Mr. Munch found out from Mr. Moore the day before the deposition was to take place that Mr. Tavote was in fact out of the country. At that point, Mr. Tavote's counsel attended the deposition and they made a record that Mr. Tavote was unavailable. At that point, Mr. Munch apparently asked for some available dates. The record suggests that Mr. Moore did not provide some. But then Mr. Munch again notices up Mr. Tavote's deposition without contacting the counsel. And in this case, he even says on the record that they had trouble determining what Mr. Moore's address was because he had apparently changed offices. But still, no phone call, not a single phone call to confirm that he received this.
Had they gotten returns to their earlier phone calls?
I don't believe there were any phone calls. I can find no mention of that. Mr. Moore, I believe, in the record when they were in front of Judge Coffey, said he did not receive any telephone calls.
Well, what did Judge Coffey say as to why... why he takes what you would characterize as a drastic step here.
He, for Mr. Tavote's failure to appear at two depositions, one of which he was physically unable to attend because he was out of the country, and the second one he had no notice of. I mean, it might not have been good practice on the part of Mr. Moore to have appeared at the first deposition rather than to file a motion to quash or take some other steps, but he at least appeared. I mean, he made an effort. So when he says on the record, I did not know or I would have showed up, but there's also nothing in the record.
For the second deposition, was there any any motion or anything filed to take a second deposition?
There was a notice sent.
Okay, so there was a notice that your client was supposed to be deposed.
Yes, but
With a date and time?
Yes, it did have the date and time. It was mailed on December 1st, setting a deposition for December 11th. But according to Mr. Moore, who was Mr. Tivote's attorney below, he never received that notice.
Did he file an affidavit that he didn't?
No, Your Honor, he did not. He made that statement on the record.
On the record, okay.
So after the second failure to appear, Mr. Munch again filed for summary judgment. But he didn't do this until February. So we have from December to February. Trial is approaching. So time's running out. But Mr. Munch does not apply to the court for any assistance. As far as I can tell from the record, he makes no effort to contact Mr. Moore to find out what's going on. And I have been in situations where something got miscalendared. And I have been in the position of both receiving and making a call to say, did you remember today was the deposition? And then it gets worked out. It doesn't appear anything of that sort happened here. But also in this case...
Let me fast forward here just a little bit. And with respect to the order on summary judgment, is it clear, is it explicit that the court did not consider the affidavit of Mr. Tivote?
It appears to me that way because what he says in his order was the court finds that plaintiffs having been denied an opportunity to depose the defendant prior to trial and the contents of the Hill affidavit that no genuine issue of material fact exists. So he looked only at the fact that Mr. Tivote had not appeared to be deposed and then what was in Ms. Hill's affidavit. And because this is the noble...
But that's an answer to a different question. Did the trial judge say explicitly, I'm not going to look at Tivote's affidavit? Which may have injected a question of fact.
He did not on the record, and this is the only remark that he made about that, but it appears that he did not consider the affidavit because if he had, there was a clear contradiction. Because Mr. Tivote...
On a material fact.
Yes, because Mr. Tivote continued to maintain that he was not aware of the existence
of the shortfall. Deficiency
in the but also, and this was not pointed out in our brief, but Ms. Hill's affidavit, the statement that she relies on, there are two statements that the court could have relied on regarding the knowledge of the underwriting account. And one is hearsay on hearsay. One is Ms. Hill saying that Ms. Soar, an apparent employee, told Ms. Hill that Ms. Soar had told Mr. Tivote that there was an underwriting deficiency. And then Ms. Hill also testified in her deposition that she knew that Mr. Tivote knew of the deficiency. Both of those would have been improper for the court to consider on a motion for summary judgment because they would not have been admissible at trial.
Was Tivote's affidavit received at the summary judgment hearing?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it was.
And was any objection made to the hearsay that you just referenced?
No, there wasn't, Your Honor, but I believe it is so significant an error that this court could notice it as well.
So the state of the record is Tivote's affidavit is in the record.
Yes,
to the effect that he didn't know of the shortfall.
Exactly.
Was there any motion made by the plaintiffs here for discovery sanctions under Rule 37D?
No, there was not, Your Honor. It was raised in the motion. If I could reserve my last minute.
You may. Thank you. Mr. Munch, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brian Munch. I am the counsel for the plaintiffs in this case. I think that the argument here needs to be corrected slightly. There was a first motion for summary judgment, and Judge Coffey found in that, even though summary judgment was not found per se, he found that Mr. Tebow only had one defense, and that was the lack of knowledge he says he had of the status of the underwriting account prior to signing the purchase agreement, signing the promissory note, and entering into the deal. Mr. Tebow had been a silent partner in this business, so functionally he's charged with knowledge of the status of the account, number one, and I believe Ms. Hill's affidavit says that she told him of the status of the account. That's how she knew that Mr. Tebow knew of the status of the account.
Are you arguing your summary judgment motion now, that there's no material issue of fact in dispute?
No, I understand it, but from a factual point of view,
there is a disputed fact.
Well, the disputed fact was that whether Mr. Tebow knew about the status of the underwriting account, and the fact is that he did, and I think the fact of that Judge Coffey took into account, he considered all of the affidavits, I think, in determining whether or not there was knowledge on his behalf.
So, but the state of the record, help me out here, is that we've got Tebow's affidavit says, I don't know, and it's admitted into evidence, and then we got some other stuff that says he knows. That's the state of the record at the time of the summary judgment ruling. Is that correct?
Well, yes, that's the state of
the
record.
And what's the inference from his, in the summary judgment context, what's the inference from his affidavit, Tebow's affidavit?
Well, based upon his failure to appear for depositions, I think the court can certainly not believe his affidavit. He doesn't have to give it.
This isn't a trial. We're at the summary judgment stage.
No, I understand that, but the judge still has, Judge Coffey still has the right to not believe Mr. Tebow's affidavit.
Does he have a right not to take the inferences from that affidavit?
I think, yeah, absolutely.
So that the outcome here is based on, as Ms. Vogt was saying initially, the judge chose not to credit the affidavit.
That's the inference that we can draw from how he acted.
Is that a proper procedure in the summary judgment?
I believe it is, because a court has wide discretion as to what it can believe or not believe.
Is that a discovery sanction?
I believe it can be a discovery sanction.
Was it brought on as a discovery sanction?
I think it was brought on in terms of disregarding his testimony because he wouldn't provide himself for deposition.
So you concede that there was no motion for discovery sanctions filed in?
Yes, I concede that. Yes, but the other things that need to be corrected were there were, and I think my affidavit that was in support of the second summary judgment was that there were telephone calls made to Mr. Laird in order to try to. I mean, there was the first deposition where he appeared, where there were a request, give us some dates, and then 10 days went by, and then phone calls were made, give us some dates. And he was unreachable. He never returned a call, never answered a call. And so that's why we scheduled it. We knew the clock was ticking. I mean, this was December, end of November, beginning of December, and trial was set for March. So we wanted to get it done and have his testimony memorialized.
Thank you.
And certainly, I think the standard is whether or not Judge Coffey acted within his discretion, and I think he's, again, given wide latitude to referee the discovery battles, as it were, and to be able to appropriately handle that. And when Mr. Tebow didn't appear and didn't file anything, didn't file, you know, motion of quash, motion of reconsideration, filed nothing until I filed the second motion for summary judgment, and then he responded. I mean, and that we're at, you know, we're at the end of the rope there, and we're, you know, looking down the barrel of the trial, and not only the trial, looking down the barrel of the second summary judgment.
Well, is it clear that this hearing was the playground for discovery sanctions?
Well, I think it was, because it was a motion for, I mean, I requested the discovery sanction and in essence, disregard his testimony, disregard his affidavit, don't let him put anything in.
Haven't the federal courts interpreted Rule 37 when dealing with kind of like a death penalty here, where it just, the party's case just evaporates?
Well,
they scrutinize it, and the courts are really reluctant to not give a person a party of their day in court. Isn't this rather kind of egregious? Couldn't he fashion some other sanctions?
Well, I think the other sanction was, or the other alternative, I think, if I recall correctly, we filed a motion to continue the trial. And Judge Coffey didn't, to allow us to take the deposition. And I got to be honest, Your Honor, I don't do any work in federal court, so I don't know really what the federal court do.
Counsel, when did you make that motion to continue? Was it at the hearing on the motion for summary judgment?
If I recall correctly, it was in conjunction with the second, it was like an alternative. We continue the trial.
To permit you to do what?
To take his deposition, correct.
Okay, and that was an oral motion that you made?
I honestly don't recall if it was part of the motion for summary judgment or if it was an oral motion. I don't recall. If it wasn't in writing, it was certainly oral.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute, 3 seconds.
1 minute and 3 seconds. Ms. Vogt.
Just two things quickly. First, a court hearing a motion for summary judgment does have to construe all the inferences as well as conflicting facts in favor of the non-moving party. That rule is so well established that a departure from it is very, very unusual. But secondly...
But until you get some... Did you have any evidence in this case, offered in this case?
Other than Mr. Tivode's affidavit?
All right.
It doesn't appear from the record there was any evidence.
And his affidavit says...
That he did not know.
Did not know.
Of the short.
So then the trial court dismissed this on the basis that he hadn't shown up for a deposition.
That's what appears from the record, Your Honor.
Didn't really reach the issues presented by the parties of a material issue of fact in dispute.
It doesn't appear to me that he did. And also, he failed to address in any way the fault of the party. If Mr. Tivode did not know about the second deposition, which is a reasonable inference from the record, then the court should have been wrong. And we request that you overturn Judge Coffey's decision and remand this to the district court.
Your question is DeVote, or your position is DeVote's affidavit created a material issue of fact?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is State